abuses. The report added that the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund, which has so far given £70 million to six Persian Gulf states, has been criticised by members of parliament and by human rights groups for leaving the public largely in the dark about how it is run and taxpayer money is spent. The latest report comes as women's rights are removed from a description of what the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund supports in Saudi Arabia, a week after Riyadh sentenced a Leeds University student and women's rights activist to 34 years in prison for following and retweeting the critics of the kingdom on Twitter. In June of last year, the British government published the Persian Gulf Strategy Fund's supports, saying it bolsters the strategic partnership and delivers mutual prosperity and security by supporting Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030 reforms across priority sectors in line with British values, including women's rights. But in the Saudi Arabia section of the news summary published on 26th of August, a week after Salma al-Shahab's 34-year prison sentence over her tweets made headlines, women's rights are no longer referenced at all. Lina al-Hathloul, head of monitoring and communications for the human rights group Al-Aqsd, said the newly published summary still doesn't provide clear and transparent answers and questioned how the Persian Gulf Strategic Fund is supporting human rights in Saudi Arabia. Dana Ahmad, West Asia and Persian Gulf researcher at Amnesty International, described the fund extremely concerning, saying Saudi Arabia's dire human rights record of silencing dissenting voices, executing individuals and ruthlessly crushing basic human rights of citizens and residents needs to be thoroughly addressed.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners, brothers and sisters from all around the world You are listening my voice from IRIB English Radio And today I have the honor to be the host of today's episode I am Beta at your service And with me I have two dear guests Brother Ali, hello, how are you doing?
Assalamu alaikum, thank
Assalamu
you
alaikum.
For inviting me, it's a pleasure to
it's
be here
It's a pleasure for me too And Brother Amit here
Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So, we're going to go through our topic today. As you know, all the women around the world are somehow different and making hijab or something like that. But one of the most important signs of Islamic women and Muslims who are women is hijab, and we are known around the world by our hijab and the way we are appear in the society, actually. So the thing is, actually, even in Islamic countries that hijab is somehow an obligation here, there is kind of, as you know, there are two groups here in women, actually, society. One group is the people who are committed to hijab and they are just covering themselves completely in a way that they should, actually, in a way the guidelines that tell you that you have to be. But there are another group that, are like, okay, we're not going to accept this, but because there is an obligation, we wear a scarf. Not in a way that they tell us, and not in a complete way, but just we wear it not to break the rules. And actually, the thing I want to ask you is that why should be somehow a kind of judgment about these people who just don't wear hijab in a complete way? You know, it's like, okay, if you don't wear hijab, you are more... you are more person that will commit a sin in this society. Why there is a kind of atmosphere about these people in this society?
Look,
this is my question.
No one, sister, is going to judge about the people. I mean, at least we people are not allowed to judge about the people. To
we
say
are not
that this
but
person,
do
for
it.
Example, who is observing hijab is a good person, or the one who is not observing hijab is a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we see that, not observing hijab by itself is sort of, let's say, sin, if we can call it, let's say, a social sin, right?
Yeah.
But anyhow, we can actually put it under a category of sins, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a person like her or like him doesn't observe hijab, so he or she committed a sin. But me as a person, for example, who observes hijab may commit hundreds of sins, right?
Yeah.
But my sins are hidden, and her sin or his sin is shown.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you have come across some people that actually are judging people like that, we are, in case they are, coming with rude, let's say, behavior to judge people, we have to tell them directly, do you understand Islam? Did Islam ask you to judge people in that way that you are talking about? So and Islam by itself never asked us to judge people in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And no one has the right to judge people in this way. Okay, she has, a deficiency in herself. I have too many of those deficiencies inside myself, right?
Yeah.
So we have to be careful that Islam wants to keep these, let's say, borders for ourselves, because we are Muslims, but we are not allowed to downgrade and, let's say, to belittle people.
Yeah.
No, people are respected, and their lives, and specifically Muslims, their lives, their blood, everything is respected, and it has to be respected. In case a person commits a sin, maybe this person who is not observing hijab today would be among the ones who is one of the best practices of hijab in future.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And to add to that, you see, policing is, we have to put a distinction between judgment and policing. Judgment is when you look at one person and you say, okay, he's either a good person or a bad person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just by looking at the hijab, you see, and good person and bad person is not like a binary, it's not a binary phenomenon where you say it's zero or one.
Mm-hmm.
A person might not wear the hijab but also do very good things. At the same time, a person wearing the hijab might also do other bad things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not one, life is not one-dimensional where it's just one thing or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's very, diverse. There are many, even the Supreme Leader, he also mentioned the same point, rather. He said that the problem with the ones who do not wear hijab properly, their problem is apparent, but our problem is unapparent.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
more hidden inside us. They're still our sisters, they're still our mothers, they're still our brother, our daughters, right?
Yeah.
And we have to, and at the same time, we put a distinction between judgment and policing and doing the amr bil ma'ruf and nahy anil munkar.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, when you approach a young girl not wearing proper hijab,
mm-hmm.
And then you tell her, please, consider this social aspect, they come back and tell you, why are you judging me? We're not judging you. We're suggesting you something better.
But the way you suggest us, the way you suggest the young generation is not somehow appropriate. I want to tell you
so
that.
So tell me how should I suggest
because
you?
Because there is an opposition. There is a kind of deep hatred in my generation about, some limitations. I don't want to call them limitations, but we see them as limitations, okay? And there are an opposition. And this opposition, the root of this opposition is exactly this one.
Mm.
When you tell us to do something, you have to be so delicate,
mm-hmm.
but you are not. you know, and I'm not talking about
that.
You, actually. I'm talking about generally.
And that is true. And Emily Marouf, when you're suggesting something,
like
someone
something
we have.
Special, you know, they were like, okay, you.
The like.
You know.
You and the like.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, okay, you have to wear hijab. Mm. Okay.
You see, we have this this ahkam of Amr al-Maruf, as you know, this enjoining the truth and enjoining the right. This, you see, there is ways of doing this. There is ways of doing this. And I understand that sometimes in the society, there are people who execute it in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
That is wrong, completely wrong. It shouldn't be done. We are against that as well. Right.
So why, for example, when it comes to hijab, you're like, okay, you know, there are rights, okay, it doesn't matter that much. We are always true, but when it comes to something, which somehow there is a paradoxical content in that, you're like, okay, I know it's not true, but what can we do for that?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that much paradoxical?
I want to agree with you 100%. Now,
really?
Let me tell you why.
It's so surprising now.
Yeah, I do agree with her. Because, you know, sister, in this country, let's talk about our country first.
Mm-hmm.
I think we really, as you said, we did not act well in this regard. Look, for one issue 20 years ago, actually, we worked very beautifully and culturally on one issue, that is fastening the seatbelt. You know, in 20 years ago, we made lots of motion graphics and lots of videos and, let's say, games. And now we see that in our society, plenty of people observe this fastening of the seatbelt of their cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it means that if we work culturally on the minds of the people and show the importance of that, so they are the people who accept. Because I think, to my own understanding, I do believe in this statement of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi, that said, our people, our nation is much more better than the nation of the Holy Prophet, you see? Mm-hmm.
That is true.
I do agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because these people actually tolerated lots of sanctions, embargoes, and pressures from different sides for 40 years and even more, but they are still resistant. But in the issue of hijab, I think we did not act well. I do agree with you. Because, you know, there are almost 90 different, let's say, organizations who are responsible for these issues,
yeah.
But none of them acted well. The only act who, for the only, let's say, organization that was active, it was the police that, look, when one in a body, when only one part of your body is growing, it's like, let's say, cancerous growth, you
yeah.
see? It means that, for example, the hand of a body is growing, but the other parts of the body are not growing.
Exactly.
Right? So only this police issue, this police, let's say, center has improved and actually promoted its activities with regard to the hijab and hijab issues. Yes, we were actually, we did not work on that well. Because
so
we could actually work and show the importance of it through, let's say, videos in this time that we are living through media, through social media. I don't know, not by speeches anymore, let's say. Because people today are not the people of listening to the speeches as much as before.
No,
right?
I differ that because there are people who listen. It should be in always speeches and non-speeches.
No, for the younger generation, I can tell you, even the speeches that are in short, let's say, portions, I think, can work here. So through, I think, good language, let's say, different media, different, let's say, genres of art and, let's say, different, let's say, methods, we can
mm-hmm.
actually work on the minds of our youngsters because they are our investment of the future, right? So we are losing that capital of ours.
Isn't it too late to correct this?
Look, sister, you know, I'm as a critic of this issue. I was not a person who is responsible. Look, a person who is a director of a movie
mm-hmm.
can direct that movie well, but he cannot. But he's not necessarily a good, let's say, player of that movie, right?
Yeah.
You see, we can criticize well, and this is good, for example, to be listened by those who are responsible, who have, let's say, status in this government.
But those who are responsible won't do anything.
What is the reason? The reason is that me and you and others have stopped doing Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahy al Munkar. That is when we stay silent and we do nothing. So this is the result.
Mm-hmm.
I remember once, actually, I was going to my hometown in a bus. The bus was almost 40 people. I think I have told it to you, huh?
I can't remember,
It was almost, again, more than 10 to 15 years ago. Look, it was morning time and wanted to pray for the morning Fajr prayer. And it was raining again outside. But I asked the driver to stop somewhere for praying. He said that, no, okay, you are the only one who is going to pray. Keep it at home. I mean, do your praying at home while we reach there. I told him, look, bro, it will be 11 when we reach home. Then there would be no fast prayer for me because it will be qada then.
Yeah.
You know, by... it was astonishing that even some people who had, let's say, a sort of religious appearance, they started to disagree with me. That say, okay, yeah. No, don't go to for prayer because it's raining and it will. I mean, you will actually put us. I mean, you will make us stuck, right? So it would take our time, and then we will not forgive you if you go and pray.
See? Here, I've never seen that in that perspective.
This is not only the sin of the person who is there. This is my sin, your sin, my fault, your fault, his fault, that we stay silent and we say, okay, they are not going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
No, if you tell him, suppose that, for example, you're moving in the street and you find a person who is doing a mistake. You are the first one. You don't let's say, quarrel her or him. Just tell her or him that this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this person might react or might not react. Again, the second person comes and tell her or him, this is wrong. Again, if 3-4 people come to him, it definitely affect the person. Don't doubt that it will affect.
Yeah.
Let me add to that. He was talking about the methodology of Amr al-Ma'ruf. You see, there are certain things that you really can't solve with, you know, simple just saying it. You know,
mm-hmm.
We have in the Ahkam itself, the way you approach Amr al-Ma'ruf is not necessarily just by speaking.
Yeah.
Once, if you're a father and you have a 7-year-old child and that child steals something from that from someone, you do adab. You know, kind of not only just speak to that child, you quarrel with that child, right? Why did you steal? You're 7 years old. By the time you become 70, you're going to be a gangster. You're going to be the head of the gang group who steals everything from the people. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one step. Now, if you don't have that ability, then what about just by speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that ability and you know that it's not going to work out, just by, you know, with, you know, actions and stuff. Like, for example, the story of Imam Hussein and Imam Hassan, when they saw this old man who wasn't making his wudu properly, they approached, they didn't say, oh, old man, you're not doing your wudu properly. Let me show you how to make the wudu. No. Just judge between us who makes a better wudu.
Yeah.
He realized. Right.
You know, thank you. Just, you know, I'm really confused right now, you know, because you were just telling me that, okay, there are good ways to do things. There are ways, actually, if you have any kind of, I don't know, any confusion about anything, you have to tell it. You have freedom in your, you know, telling anything. But in your actions and whatever else, you have to be more, you have to pay more attention to that sort of things. And you are free to think, you are free to search, and you are free to ask, but you are not free to do anything you want. And
exactly.
I really think, you know, actually, I really appreciate your conversation. And I think I'm convinced somehow. I wish our listeners were enjoying our conversation too. And that was all for the 2-day episode. Thank you, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. Farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please say, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, yaquluha lana yawm al-qiyamati. Ummati, Ummati, yaquluha shafa'atan ana laha. Thank you.
food for thought.
Hello, everyone. Yesterday, we observed the passing away anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Ma'sume, peace be upon her, who reposes in eternal peace in the city of Qom, where devotees seek her intercession with God Almighty with these words. O Fatima, intercede for me for the reward of paradise, for certainly you have with God a lofty status.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones, which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture. China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lap component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says it's strange to meet so many people with the same name, obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest's ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. An another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula Line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula Line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
It is never too late to learn a new skill. That's what 100-year-old Nada Rudan has shown with her art when she discovered her love for painting at the age of 87. The Bosnian native says she started to paint to keep herself busy, and now she finds the days are often too short to fit in everything she wanted to do. The artist paints for 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon without glasses. Rudan marked her 100th birthday with an exhibition of all the works that she has painted over the years.
My 100th birthday, I've celebrated it at sea. That was really a big event for me. Before that, I had an exhibition that I didn't hope for. But my children persuaded me. I was against it. I'm not an artist. I said, children, don't embarrass me.
She says she's inspired by nature and her travel around the globe. Rudan has lived in numerous areas such as Central America, Hawaii Islands, Europe, and the Asian Himalayas, among many other places. The artist survived both World War II and the siege of Sarajevo by Bosnian Serb forces. Iran's Kish Island is known as the paradise of the Persian Gulf. Our correspondent Youssef Jalali has been to the stunning southern Iranian resort island and has filed this report about its beautiful attractions.
It's no land at the heart of a scorching but amazing island. This snow town is one of the latest entertainment centers in Iran's Kish Island in the Persian Gulf. Every year, some 2 million visitors from inside and outside Iran visit the island to enjoy its attractions, from its entertainment centers to its stunning beach.
The beach and the pier in Kish are really peaceful and tranquilizing. It's the third time I'm visiting the island, and I went parasailing, water skiing, and I'm planning to go scuba diving.
Kish Island offers all kinds of sea entertainment activities, from scuba diving to sailing, and oh yes, flyboarding. Besides sea sports, visitors can enjoy its amusement parks and a range of leisure activities inside the island. And if you're a tireless window shopper, Kish is a land of malls and shopping centers.
Kish is an amazing island. It used to be an abandoned island some 3 decades ago, but today it is a luxurious tourist resort with modern buildings and exciting recreational places.
Despite all the pleasure one can have in Kish, the island still has many shortcomings. The major issue annoying visitors is the poor accommodation services.
Hotel facilities and services are a bit weak given the large number of tourists that visit this island. They need to pay more attention to the accommodation infrastructure.
Just a few hundred kilometers away from Kish, there's a tourist magnet in the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, which absorbs the chunk of foreign tourists, while U.S. sanctions on Iran are a major factor to blame for Kish lagging behind in its rivalry with Dubai. The island's officials believe it still has a chance to win the game of tourism against Dubai.
If we want to excel, it is not going to be a tough job. We need to work on two major areas. The first is the infrastructure, and the second is regulations that would allow tourists or investors to easily come to Kish to entertain themselves or do business.
Situated off the southern coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf, Kish is one of Iran's free trade zones. Foreign travelers do not need a visa to visit the island, as travel permits are issued on arrival by Kish officials and are valid for up to 14 days.
With its mesmerizing nature and eye-catching urban landscapes, Kish has earned the title of the Bride of the Persian Gulf. Its authorities say the island is already a hub for Iranian travelers, but they say they seek to turn it into a regional tourist magnet. Yusuf Jalali from Kish Island.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and the subjects. And and of course we have in those areas the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out three patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam dina.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of the Almighty Allah, dear brothers, dear sisters, Salamun alaikum. So welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. And for today, we're going to speak about paradise in the view of Islam. So I invite you to be with us. Salamu alaikum. But first, let's look at the calendar. Today, Sunday, is the 4th of Rabiul Thani, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 15th of the month of Aban, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 6th of November, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, we start with the Holy Quran. We listen to chapter Hud, verse 23, please.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Innalladhina amanu wa 'amilus salihati wa akhbatu ila rabbihim ulaika ashabul jannah. Hum fiha khalidun.
Indeed, they who have believed and done righteous deeds and humbled themselves to their Lord, those are the companions of paradise. They will abide eternally therein.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Reward and encourage have been mentioned along with warning and threats. Following the verses which explain the fate of those who are involved in giving false accusations, this verse exposes the profile of those involved in righteous deeds. It implies that those who believe and perform righteous acts and behave well, who submit themselves before Allah and are confident of His promises, will be among the companions of paradise, remaining there forever.
Life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light, guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in life. A world that often lies, cause I don't need anyone, anything in life, but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
This is today's special and paradise in the view of Islam. Paradise or heaven is of different degrees of loftiness and happiness. Unlike hell, which is a very deep pit of fire, paradise is level, or say many levels, so much so that even its rivers do not bore holes on its surface, but flow miraculously in their path without scathing the surface. And there is more than one heaven or garden. Verse 64 of Surah Ar-Rahman, Chapter 55, is comprised of one single word which describes two dark green gardens, while verse 62 of the same surah tells us that there are besides these two gardens, there are two other ones, bringing the total number of gardens comprising the eternal abode of bliss to four. The highest pinnacle of paradise is the Garden of Eden.
Thank you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum and welcome. This is your host, Ali, and we are with you with another topic. Today, inshallah, we are going to talk about heaven and the abiders of heaven, al-Jannah. We want to see what the Jannah or heaven is and what are the features of the abiders, those residents of heaven are. Heaven or al-Jannah, according to a Muslim terminology, is a place in the afterlife where the righteous and prosperous people will reside and enjoy divine blessings. The place where Adam and Eve lived before their fall or hubut to the earth. It is also referred to as al-Jannah. There are over 200 verses of the Holy Quran, as well as many hadith and narrations from the infallibles, the Holy Prophet and his progeny, with regard to the heaven and its features, such as its vastness, the number of heavens, variety of features of its blessings, things in the heaven, the purpose of the creation, and also the characteristics of the residents, characters and actions that make one deserve to reside in the heaven. So it's good to listen to these things based on what we have received from divine sources, from Al-Quran and the narrations of the Holy Prophet and his progeny. And also in these verses and hadith and narrations, we read about people who are deprived of the heaven and the relationship between the residents of the heaven. Although the belief in the heaven is a crucial Islamic doctrine, there are disagreements among Muslim theologians over whether the heaven will be created in the afterlife or it is already created. Moreover, Muslim scholars, both Shias and Sunnis, dispute over whether the heaven and its blessings are corporeal or spiritual. So these are still controversial issues, but we shall inshallah discuss that based on, let's say, authentic hadiths. They go more with corporal, let's say, corporal entity.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every bar.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
The pleasures of paradise is the point of this part. Pure delight without pain and suffering, can you imagine? While people in this world experience some delight, they also face much toil and suffering. If one was to scrutinize the life which they live, they will find that the amount of hardship they face is much more than the ease and comfort. As for the life of the hereafter, there will be neither hardship nor suffering in it, and people will live therein in pure joy and delight. All the causes of sorrow, pain, and suffering which people experience in this life will be absent in the hereafter. When one thinks of success in this life, they usually conjure the imagine of big houses, fine jewelry and clothing and expensive cars. Financial stability is seen to be the key to a happy life. To most people, success is inseparably related to wealth, even though this is the furthest from the truth. How many times have we seen the wealthiest of people living such miserable lives that it sometimes even leads them to commit suicide?
Allahu, Allah, Allah.
as usual, we have a light part here that starts with the question, how to achieve paradise. If we divide it, the ways of achieving paradise to lessons, lesson one is working patience. Those who were patient in hard times, patient in avoiding what Allah has forbidden, patient in following His commands, and patient with others, will taste the fruit of their patience. Patience takes work. So work patience in this world to hear these words in Jannah. I read the translation of chapter 39, verse 73. And those who kept their duty to their Lord will be led to paradise in groups, till when they reach it, and its gate will be opened, and its keepers will say, Salamun alaykum, you have done well, so enter here to abide therein.
The greatest transaction of the dunya that we will ever conduct is the transaction between us and Allah Azza wa Jal. He says in the Quran, إِنَّ اللَّهَ اشْتَرَى مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ أَنفُسَهُمْ بِأَنَّ لَهُمُ الْجَنَّةِ. Allah says that I will buy your soul and in return I will sell you al-jannah. Allah wants to sell us al-jannah. Allah also uses marketing techniques in order to make jannah beautiful in our eyes. In the Quran, he markets al-Jannah. He advertises Jannatun tajri min tahtiha al-anhar. He gives beautiful descriptions of the rivers and the valleys and the gardens of al-Jannah. He tells us about al-Hur al-Ain, al-Wuldan al-Mukhalladun. He tells us about the food of al-Jannah. He tells us about the clothing of al-Jannah and about the ni'am of al-Jannah. And the point is, he wants you to seek al-Jannah. Just like that company wants you to buy their products, Allah wants you to seek al-Jannah. He's marketing the Jannah. However, there is one huge difference between the marketing of Allah and the marketing that we see in the dunya. What is that difference? The difference, my friends, is that we said in the marketing of the dunya of the corporations, there is always what? Over-promising, under-delivering. With the Jannah of Allah Azza wa Jal, no matter how much you praise al-Jannah, no matter how great you make it appear, no matter how appealing you present it, you can never exaggerate the greatness of al-Jannah. It will always be an understatement. You will have the opposite problem. The problem of under-promising, but then over-delivering. Why is it a problem? Because many people will not be interested in the Jannah, even though it's so great, because it's under-promising. It's an understatement. No matter what you say about al-Jannah, it will never be enough. It will never be like the true Jannah.
I was so far from you. Yet to me, you were always so close. I wandered lost in the dark. I closed my eyes to all the signs you put in my way. I walked every day further.
Dear friends, dear believers, we hope you've made the most use of today's program. Please send your comments and suggestions at parstoday.com/yen. Please do keep us in your prayer. Fi amanillah.
Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah. All praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah. All praises to Allah. All praises to
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says reports that it has supplied missiles to Russia are completely wrong, and that a small number of drones supplied were sent before the war in Ukraine. New polls indicating a growing number of Americans are worried about the breakout.